Adam Muir is an educator and researcher who's completing his PhD at Griffith University, and his approach is a media archaeology approach, and one of the areas he's looking at is networked media environments, and he's also interested in the history of personal computers and actually has a little collection, it says here, of the Commodore Amiga personal computers. How many, Adam? A lot, or he doesn't want to share. Okay, thank you, Adam. Adam's talk is titled Unearthing the Oz Scene. Thank you.
So I guess first of all, I'd like to thank you all for being here today, and also to thank Melanie and the organisers, and also the AV people who never get enough love. And as a musician, let's give them a round of applause. Doing an awesome job. As a musician and a sort of former sound guy myself, I know that story. So I'm talking a little bit about some of the stuff about the demo scene. We had the earlier paper before lunch. So some of what I'll talk about will be a little bit familiar, but I will repeat some of it, some other aspects, so some of it will be similar, but I'll try to skip some of the material that that Maria covered already. So obviously, as we heard in the earlier paper, the roots of the demo scene come from the early home computer era, the 1980s, which began with 8-bit home computers, in particular the Commodore 64. And that one was the main sort of one because it was one of the first multimedia machines. And with the release of... pressed the wrong one. And what I'd like to talk about is looking at some of the material that was collected around the demo scene, and maybe some challenges to the preservation and analysis of these materials. And I want to use the example of the Australian local scene, just maybe continue that thread from that we were talking about earlier, and to look at the Oz Scene Project, which is a very new archive. And we'll have a look at that towards the end. So as I mentioned just before, the demo scene kind of begins with the Commodore 64 and the Commodore Amiga series of personal computers. It's considered the golden era of the demo scene, sort of the time period of the 1980s to the 1990s. But I want to talk about that in the historical perspective. As we saw, the demo scene does continue to this day, but this archival stuff that I want to talk about is maybe looking back and filling in the holes, I guess. So the general motivation, as we saw earlier in the demo scene, is to push computing hardware to its limits and beyond through the use of creative computing and design and programming techniques. So historically, the demo scene was scattered, mainly in geographical sort of pockets. And thanks to the pre-World Wide Web internet, the demo scene grew through the use of dial-up modems and bulletin boards and various services like that. Obviously, in different countries, they had different, you know, systems, depending on your geographical location. It's an early example of what Bennett and Peterson call a translocal scene. That very much comes from this idea of, you know, music scenes or tribes or neo-tribes, which comes to us obviously from some ideas around cultural theory. The collected history from the early demo scene was fragmented, but now has been, through various efforts that some of which were highlighted before, they've been retroactively compiled. So the challenge is not necessarily archiving what's now, but going and finding the material that fills in these blanks from local scenes. So what kind of materials do we collect? We saw a little bit about this earlier, the kinds of things that go into demo scene materials. You have audio-visual stuff, which are the demos. That's the most common thing that people collect. That's, as we saw, the executables that run on different platforms to show off people's, you know, visual and music and, you know, design and programming abilities. And from a preservation perspective, those computational or born digital materials present challenges that maybe are similar to those faced by communities like the NetArt communities or the electronic literature communities, or even some senses video games, because these demo things kind of sit between all of those communities, those different fields. But there are other things that we can collect, and that's not just, as we've seen here, the demos, still images, graphics, anti-ASCII and PESCII art, and music and audio, various formats. But there are still other things that we can collect. things like wild demos, which can be most easily, you know, classified under the hashtag WTF, things like when the side of a building, you know, is lit up in, with windows, or making a demo that runs on something like a washing machine or a fridge, or a little calculator, or things which you can't even classify go under the category of wild demos in terms of the competitions that people have at demo parties. We'll talk about that in a second. Also some other things that we could collect, stuff that we might call ephemera, disc mags, as we talked about, like fan magazines that came on floppy disks, NFO files, which are files that describe various maybe wares, like cracked and pirated games and stuff, through to things like the competition results from demo meetups, you know, the parties, and things like forum discussions. There's lots of other things. But I mentioned these because these aren't things that people necessarily think to collect, which I think are important. So that's one challenge for us, I guess. Another thing that's interesting to talk about, a challenge for demo scene communities, is not just the multimedia output that I've talked about, but things like the source code and the tools that people use behind the scenes to create their demos. The next slide up there talks about the idea of how the demo scene community does like knowledge sharing within the community. And so as came up in the question time from the last session, in the demo scene, the source code that goes into demos isn't often shared. Some of the reasons for that are people don't want other people to obviously steal their cool ideas. Obviously, there's an emphasis on people coming up with their own, you know, using their own skills and their own effort. And also, sometimes there are proprietary things to consider. So some of these people that work in the demo scene also work in software houses or in commercial organisations, and some of the techniques that they may use for software end up in commercial software or proprietary software. So that's one kind of challenge as well. But sometimes, like this slide illustrates, at demo parties, people will do seminars where they will talk through how they designed and created various things. Like this one, actually, no coincidence that this is the person who developed the demo that we saw earlier, which is one of my favourites, the elevator demo. 4K, can you guys believe that? 4K to do that. That's, you know what I mean? I say that to people sometimes at different conferences and they don't quite understand. It's 4 kilobytes. It's not 4K like your HD TV. You know what I mean? That's not what the 4K means. 4K means K when you save, you know, just your name. You know, 4K is text, you know, anyway. Slight digression. So as I mentioned, things like the source code are important, but also things like the results from competitions are incredibly important because within the community, they offer a record of prestige and fame, and as we saw, the idea of having a reputation in the scene, that's really important. Important also in the sense of the translocal scene are the idea of the discussion boards and message forums and stuff like that, which have continued from the BBS bulletin board system origins of the scene. People might say that the demo scene boards are, you know, immature or silly or irrelevant, and it's true, sometimes they are. They can be a little bit 4chan-esque sometimes, but that's not, you know, why is that a negative thing? That's the community, you know, so that's another thing. What happens when these message boards go away? Who's backing up the message boards? You know, do we have to rely on groups like Archive Team? You know, are they going to come in and save the forums? As we've seen in things like, you know, very subcultural studies kind of, you know, analysis, materials like that are intrinsic to how the subculture functions. They provide that sense of cultural capital for the demo scene. Many demos themselves have in-jokes, references, conversations from forums or past demos. They're very self-referential sometimes. You know, people remixing older demos, you know, an 11K demo gets remixed into a 4K demo, for example, you know. These things are really important to identify. And I mention that because identifying demo productions themselves are sometimes difficult. Where's my next one? Talking about some of... this is something from the height of the Amiga demo scene. Anyone from the Amiga demo scene may understand that. reference. But I put this up here because this is one of the things I was talking about next. So who's doing the preserving? Mostly, as we've seen before, it's amateur archivists, so fans and members of the demo scene, who have done a remarkable job in documenting these activities. The literature around preservation and cultural heritage often mentions amateur archivists, for example, around music museums run by fans and volunteers. And that's really what we're talking about in this instance. Because what we've seen, as we saw earlier, on these archives, we see the collections of the EXE files, like the binaries that people will double-click, you know, to load, you know, when you double-click on a program on your computer. Wait, we don't say program, is there? We say apps these days, don't we? So the executables are stored, but as we've also seen, the advent of easy online video means that people create videos of various quality. And that can actually be deceptive. I heard someone commenting before when Maria was loading up the video, and they said, oh, that's 20 megabytes, that's not 4K. Well, that was the video of the demo. It's not the actual demo itself. So the majority of the productions are executables, and they also store videos. But what if you want to go in and look at the YouTube videos and you want to find every demo that has a particular effect? So like a particular kind of scrolling thing or a particular animation effect, or everything that's got a checkerboard with a chrome sphere floating above it. You know, hint, hint, Amiga guys from the 1990s. It was a very big trend to see this effect in particular. So what if I wanted to find every demo on YouTube that had that effect? How would you do that? So the idea is, what is missing here is a challenge to maybe how we archive and find these materials. Unless you're someone who's been in the scene for a long time and watched thousands of videos, maybe, and taken notes, maybe, it would be very difficult to find them. So what's missing here is a grammar, perhaps, in the sense of, you know Lev Manovic's idea of the language of new media from the early 2000s. Love it or hate it, but maybe that's what we need, some kind of grammar. Because we have names for the effects, but how do we find them? There was reference earlier to a paper that came out earlier this year from Canon Hustic, where she put out the idea of putting up various ways to close read demos. So the idea that you might go through and look at different sequences, that's sort of a brute force way of doing it, but it's a very crude way of doing it, which you could do simply, but Hustic also promotes the idea of maybe doing other ways of reading the demos using visualization techniques that might come from other fields, I guess. Fields like literature studies, where, you know, the idea of in literature studies, you'd count the number of words, you know, in a particular corpus or whatever. So could we do something similar based on sequences of images and colors and effects and so on? Using the keyframes of videos and different techniques like that. Because there is a large corpus of data that is worth examining already. So sort of coming towards the end, thinking about different ways, different things that we should collect. This is a very new archive that began in 2012. It's the Oz Scene Archive. It's mostly work collected at the moment from the 1990s. So let's say sort of about 1990 to 1995-ish, the material that's there. Obviously, if you go and visit the site, there won't be all these broken plug-in things down the side. There's normally videos there that they have, videos of various things. I do apologize, it's because I'm a Linux user. Any Linux users here will know that Linux users get no love from Adobe for the Flash plugins. So that's why that popped up when I took the screen cap. Normally there's videos, but they've also collected a remarkable amount of material there in terms of looking at the Australian scene. Funnily enough, a lot of the material, actually most of the history comes from disc mags. A lot of the material doesn't actually, or hasn't so far, come from users. And that's a really interesting challenge, because if we're trying to look for this material, it really has been word of mouth. And I think that's a larger sort of hurdle for us. You know, do we really rely on, when we're doing this kind of preservation, how much can you rely on nostalgia? You know, like, and this is not just for this. This could be also for video games. You know, and also, you know, is it? Do we have to rely on word of mouth? You know, people telling other people. You know, go and check this out. So, if you know anybody who's interested in this kind of stuff, or if you yourself, were a demo scene person yourself from the Australian scene, please contribute something, because it's very limited at the moment, but it's a really good start. There's another archive which I found out recently has been really updated, but I haven't had a chance to look at. That's the Sumia archive, coming out of Sydney, I think, which also adds and reproduces a lot of material from here. So I guess it's an open invitation. These guys, I think, in the Oz scene have mimicked a lot of what you see in the European demo scene community, which is where most of the activity happens. As we mentioned earlier, Sweden and Finland are the sort of the hubs, and Germany to a lesser extent, very much more so than places like the US. So I guess getting people interested in the demo scene is also an interesting hurdle that I've noticed recently. There are still currently, to date, two active demo parties in Australia. We had one 2 weeks ago in Sydney. That's the Flashback event, as advertised there. And for Melbourne people who may be interested in this, there's also the Syntax demo party, which happens in November every year, mid-November. And we've been really trying to put an outreach to people to try to bring new people into the scene. But it's difficult. Because the general population, unless they're technically oriented, they don't necessarily know what they're looking at. Like, as we saw with that demo earlier, if you showed that to most people, as I have done in previous sort of, you know, conference presentations and so on, they tend to just look at it and go, yeah, that's a 3D scene. I saw that at the cinema, you know, Avatar or you know, all these Pixar movies and so on. So it's sort of meaningless to a general person. So I don't know whether you can sort of appeal to people beyond a sense of nostalgia. I'm not sure. I guess lots of demo scene people also say, well, why do we need the general population? You know, is this just doomed to be a niche kind of market? I guess why I find this interesting is because it straddles a very interesting sort of terrain between video games and also personal computer history. I think it's an important way that we should look at, in the same way that we collect net art. You know, I don't think I need to make a case for people wanting to preserve net art, because people go, well, that's examples of, you know, art that was generated and lives on the internet. And the same goes for this. I think this is, because it still exists to this day, just, you know, the focus has changed from maybe retro in some old school stuff to new school stuff. I still think it's worthwhile to be looking at this kind of stuff, especially since a lot of the stuff that happens in the demo scene ends up in video games. So when you're looking at the history of video games and video game effects and doing close readings of video game stuff, a lot of it comes from here, and not just games, but also software. I think some of you would have heard me speak about when I spoke about the demo scene last time, talking about the idea of software techniques like compression, which goes into a lot of multimedia stuff. You know, that comes from, a lot of it comes from the demo scene and so on. Couple of minutes left. So yeah, as I mentioned, I think the demo scene is a missing link between these areas of personal creative computing, particularly around some of the retro platforms. As we kind of saw earlier, it's not all about retro stuff, it's about modern stuff as well. The demo that we saw earlier was a contemporary one from 2009. But, you know, people still go back and look at these old platforms. I was thinking about this earlier, a thought that came up, I guess, from the last session. And it's something that comes up when I speak at different things, and I've talked to, you know, like collectors, and I've talked to home enthusiasts, and I've talked to archivists. And I was thinking about at what point, and I might leave it with this question, at what point do you go from being an amateur archivist, maybe consider, I guess what I'm interested in is the life cycle. Yeah, how do you go from being a hoarder, who's a person who collects old computer junk? Anyone here laughs knowingly, anyone who collects old computer stuff, you know, you would understand where I come from. At what point do you go from being a hoarder, person who collects junk to being a collector, you know, when the junk takes over a whole room in your house? At what point do you become an archivist? Do you need an institution behind you to be considered an archivist? Or, you know, is something like this, you know, the people who do this, the three people who run this website, you know, are they archivists? Does it really matter? Is it just a question of semantics? I'm not sure. So I encourage you to go and have a look at this if you're interested in video game stuff. I might leave it there. So thanks for listening, everybody.